Hello, I'm Simon Guerrier, the author of some Doctor Who stuff, and you are listening to the Handsome Timmy D Express.
Hello, dear reader. Hello, dear listener. Welcome to episode 35 of the Handsome Timmy D Express, which is a proud part of the Dan and Travis Show, an awesome podcast about awesome things. You can find them on iTunes and your podcast app, or just Google Dan and Travis. They'll come up. We're also a proud part of the Chronic Rift, a series of podcasts that attempt to find the culture in pop culture. And thanks to listeners like you, the HTD Express has appeared several times in the Chronic Rift's monthly top 10. So thanks so much, everybody, for listening and spreading the word. And thanks, everyone, for listening and retweeting and downloading the interview with Gregor Collins and the Accidental Caregiver. He just had his reading in New York, and a lot of good things are happening with that project. And we continue to wish him well and hope to see it on the big screen. Okay, today I am very proud to welcome a member of a rather exclusive club. She's one of the few actors to appear in the franchises Star Trek and Doctor Who. There's actually not a lot of people that have appeared in both of them, so that's one hell of a feather in her cap. And if that's not enough, she's been in just a ton of TV shows, from Knight Rider to Murder, She Wrote to NCIS to The OC, and now she's endeavoring on a new project to she's writing and producing for the first time. She's now stepping behind the camera a little bit and is going to be producing, writing, and starring in a new independent short called Once More with Feeling. Welcome to the Handsome Timidity Express, Daphne Ashbrook.
Thank you. Yay. Hi.
Hi. Great to see you.
Thank you very much.
No, absolutely. So, well, you have...
I know.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say this is lovely because we've met several times in the past, and I'm really looking forward to doing this with you.
Oh, darling, stop it. I'm honored to have you on board. And now, what's interesting, too, you talked about us meeting several times. We've met at some Doctor Who events because everybody knows I'm a big fan. And you were in the Fox TV movies, Grace Holloway. But we've also met at several writing events and like Writers Guild events and things like that. We turn around, hey, it's Daphne Ashbrook. How are you? What inspired you sort of to, you know, you have an enviable career as an actor. But what's inspired you to now pick up pen and put it to paper and start writing? And how did this project come about?
Well, I can tell you I've been writing for years and years and years. I've always loved to write, and once I'd been in the business long enough and had read enough scripts and been in enough film projects, I felt like I had, you know, enough knowledge to be able to start writing my own scripts. Plus, in truth, there's just not as many characters out there for women, at least not as many as I would like, especially women of a certain age, if you will. And so even when back when I first started to write, when I was a lot younger and was, you know, fully engaged as an actor, I just felt like I wanted to contribute, characters that were interesting to me that I wasn't seeing on film. So I started to write because of that. And I really wrote for myself mostly. And then this one, came about because I had written another script, a feature-length film, and it was, I thought, a really beautiful story, and I thought, you know, let's try to get this done. I've been telling people for years, especially actors, you know, don't wait for somebody to give you a job. You know, go ahead and create your own future.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd never really taken that big step to do it. So I was really pushing to try to learn the production side of things because I obviously did not have that experience. So I was reading books, I was talking to people and got some great advice. And then I felt that a full feature length film was something that maybe I should push back a little bit on and go ahead and do something that I could really get my arms around and learn from the experience. And boy, have I been learning. So that's how the short came about. But I will say this, several years ago, I went to the beautiful Joshua Tree National Park, and I was just, you know, messing around, and I climbed a rock, and I got to the top of the rock, and turned around to come back down, and had this horrible attack of fear of heights. Now, I knew I'd had issues with this. I'd had several horrifying things happen But The Rock just didn't seem that daunting. It seemed like a very simple thing. It was like up, down, no problem. And I was with my daughter and a man who I went there with, and they had no problem. So I basically got stuck on this rock for like an hour and a half and was absolutely, I mean, there's a place you go when you get to the phobia stage where logic has no meaning and you start losing control over your body. It's just terrifying. And so I basically just plastered myself to this rock and I was kind of in an upside down position, weirdly. And I was stuck. I couldn't move. And while I was experiencing all of that, I kind of started to see with my, I don't know, I'm going to call it my Irish side of my bloodline, mm-hmm. how hilarious this was. I mean, I just thought this is the funniest thing. If I weren't going through this, I would be laughing hysterically. So that gave me an idea to write a short. And this was many years ago. I did finally get off the rock, obviously.
Yeah, you're not still up at Joshua Tree. It's great reception there if you are on the rock.
I'm not. Yeah, no, you don't get reception up in Joshua Tree, let me tell you. But yeah, no, I was just absolutely terrified and out of pure ego. Because all this stuff was going through my brain. I mean, I was thinking, they're going to have to call the fire department. They're going to have to, I was picturing them putting the ladder up, chink, 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 and then saying, ma'am, it's okay. Just grab onto the ladder. And I knew I wouldn't be able to. I would have told the guy to, fly a kite. So that wasn't going to work. And then I thought, oh my God, they're going to have to bring a helicopter in. I mean, I was trying to figure out how I'm going to get off this rock. And they're going to bring a helicopter and they're going to lower a ladder and they're going to say, ma'am, it's really okay. Just grab onto the ladder. And I would be, no, I'm not doing that. So I just couldn't take the humiliation of something like that happening and finally turned around after about an hour and a half and just said, I'm going down. Now, the man I was with got in front of me and said, okay, so, if you start to fall, I'll be here and you won't fall, I'll catch you, which was impossible, but he was trying.
Sure.
And so we started to kind of inch our way down the rock. I just said to him, don't just whatever you do, don't stop. Because once we go, we got to go. I don't know why I knew that, but he did stop as we were making our way down the rock. And I basically had to start all over to get my courage back up to make myself move again. And then I finally just said, just move away, just move out of the way. I'm just going to have to do this alone. And then I did. So I walked away from there and was real. I mean, Joshua Tree is absolutely gorgeous. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's so pretty. But I never wanted to come back to that park ever again. I never thought about it, other than when I was writing the original short. So years go by. I've now decided I'm going to go do this short film. I'm going to learn everything I can. I'm going to get good at this producing thing and I'm going to make this thing happen. And then I found an actor I really wanted to work with. His name is Jason Britt. He's absolutely amazing. And I'd worked with him on stage a few times and had seen him on stage many times. And he's just really extraordinary. And I thought, I really want to work with this guy. But my original script was, with someone my own age, and he's younger than I am. And so it would have, I originally was going, I've got to change the script because the age thing. So I struggled with that I really resisted making it a love story. And then I thought about my favorite film in the world, which is Harold and Maude. And anybody who's seen that knows that it's about a love story that is affected by the fact that these two people have a huge difference in age. Now, obviously, we're not going that far. I'm not 80 years old and he's not 19, but there is a stretch. And I thought, well, what the hell? I'm just going to do this thing. I'll make it work. And that can contribute to the funny part of the script. So I went to work, wrote the thing. I got a great investor, who I won't name right now, but investing $10,000 into this project. And now I've got the Indiegogo thing going to get the next 15, because it's going to take about $25,000. Shooting up in Joshua Tree is not cheap. I have to basically bring everyone out, put everyone up for a couple days, for a few days. It kind of racks up the money. And so when I looked at the budget, I was realizing I'm going to have to really get some money going. So I've got this Indiegogo thing going, and it looks great. We just cracked 2,000. Woohoo! And we're going to, one way or another, going to make this thing happen. And so that's sort of how this all came about. And it's been a huge learning curve, but I'm getting the hang of it. It feels good. So I'm very excited.
Now, just to throw out there, the Indiegogo campaign link is below. If anybody wants to go click the link on it. And if you don't have it, if you're listening to another via another feed, just go to Indiegogo and look up Once More With Feeling. It'll come right up. I can absolutely sympathize with a lot of what you're talking about, because I suffer a mild case of vertigo and have serious fear of heights. And it is true, the sort of physical nature of the freezing that happens. Like, I remember driving through mountains and almost being unable to hit the gas because I thought I was going to go over the edge.
Yep.
Like, I can't yeah. do it. I'm yeah. going to go over the, and it's completely irrational. You know, you're not going to do
totally
it.
It's totally irrational.
But it's a hard thing to explain.
I don't know, man. It is really hard to explain. I got stuck on, I already had obvious, issues with heights. I used to ski like a crazy person. I used to be a major skier, and I hadn't been skiing in years. And I went up there again with my daughter, poor thing. And, I didn't realize what I was getting myself into, honestly. Okay. Until I was standing with my skis on with my daughter waiting for the lift to catch us and bring us up. And then I realized, oh my God, what have I done? And I ended up, these ski lifts, anybody who's been skiing, you're sitting on these like things that are they're real skinny and there's nothing holding you in. And the skis and the boots and everything are heavy. So you're kind of pulling forward and you're hundreds of feet up in the sky and, you fall. And if you don't die, you're going to certainly be banged up quite a bit. And it was one of the worst experiences. And my poor kid, I kept trying to figure out what to look at that would make it better, because I kept feeling like I'm terrified I'm going to fall. Right. And at the same time, I was going to let myself fall. That's the weird thing. You feel like you're not going to be able to stop yourself from letting go. It's very odd, contradictory, very strange, and hideous. So I'm freaking out. And finally, I just had to close my eyes and tell my daughter, just tell me when we get to the top of the lift and when we got to stand and get off this thing, because I have to close my eyes. So,
yeah.
So I did. And I just basically sort of crashed as soon as I got off the lift. But I really felt like I was going to let myself fall. It's just the oddest thing. Now, I've since been on a location scout. If you go to my Once More With Feeling Facebook page, you can see tons of pictures there. And also on my Daphne Ashbrook official page, you can go there and see all these incredible pictures of what we saw and what we did up there to find the location. And I had two meltdowns, but I also conquered like crazy. I was like climbing all kinds of rocks and doing all kinds of things, made my DP, Dylan Glockler, he was a little nervous about some of the stuff I was climbing on, as well as my producer, Sean O'Brien. They were both kind of getting queasy a couple times when I was climbing. But I'll tell you something. I'm an actor. I come from a family of actors, and we're from the theater. And there's this saying, the show must go on. And I think I just sort of flipped a switch as I got up there. And by the way, as I'm approaching Joshua Tree, I'm getting kind of sick to my stomach because I'm kind of fearing what I'm about to do. But once I got up there, I was really good. I really just flipped the switch and just said, got to do this. We've got to find the right rocks. I don't have time to be scared. I don't have time to have a meltdown. And like I said, I did have two. And they did reflect the script. both the DP and my producer said at the same time after the first as I was going through the first meltdown, and I'm saying, "Don't touch me! Don't touch me!" I don't know why that's a bit. Just don't touch me. If you, it's almost like I feel like it's like awakenings. Those people that were kind of frozen in time, but if you give them a pattern, they can move. I don't know how better to describe it, but it's almost like a link to movement. And if someone touches me, I feel like I'm gonna move and fall. So anyway, I'm don't touch me, don't touch me, and freaking out. And they both said very quietly, "I totally understand the script."
I was gonna say you actually almost gave them the best direction possible by like this is what it is, you know. But
yeah, and it was funny. They were trying not to laugh, and I heard them laughing at different times. They're not cruel people, but it's funny to watch somebody going through that. There's a side of you that just can't help but see how absurd it is, you know? And so the script really does reflect the absurdities. And I took it to the nth degree too. And we're not stopping with fear of heights. There's a lot of heavy, subject matter that we're approaching or whatever, that we're dealing with in the script. And, but I tend to find a lot of funny things in the darkest moments. So, and that tends to be my kind of thing. It's my favorite kind of film to watch. The one that where you're sitting there going, "I can't believe I'm really laughing at this." And at this, you know, it reminds me a little bit of Birdman. I mean, it's not going to be Birdman, but he was going through such an awful, hideous, humiliating moments as an actor, you know, as a human being. And, my daughter and I went to see that when I was visiting her in New York. And we laughed through the entire thing. I mean, it was just the funniest, sick funny, you know, dark humor. So that's my thing. I don't know. Kind of an Irish thing. I'm going to blame it on my Irish blood. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think it's such a shame. I think humor is such an integral part of dramas. And the best dramas will have an enormous amount of humor in them. And it doesn't mean they're, and there's a way of doing it where it doesn't undercut the drama. Like, in other words, you're not necessarily laughing at the horror. Like, people are always shocked when I say this. I've seen Schindler's List about 10 or 15 times. And after about the first 10 times, I'm like, wait a second, Liam Neeson and Ben Kingsley are kind of doing a double act, and they're doing some funny stuff. But you have to get over the horror of the rest of the drama. Like, cause you have to sort of realize, cause I mean, that's such a powerful experience watching Schindler's List. And once I saw it several times, I was like, wait, there's a lot of funny stuff in here. But I can't like walk into a dinner party and say, "I watched Schindler's List the other day and it's so funny." And because people look at you like, "What the hell's wrong with you?" And it's like, no, I'm not undercutting the horror of what happened. But so much of us, both in real life and I think in the arts, humor is absolutely a coping mechanism and trying to find a way to come to terms with these things.
Yes. And it's also, I think, a great opening. I think humor can be an opening to the whatever psyche, if you will, where you can maybe understand a kind of horrific event in a different way. And you're right, it is coping. It makes it, I don't know, survivable. But I like things that make me think, and I like films that make me conflicted. And I like films that make me feel challenged to understand what's going on, and to grapple with the subject matter. And humor is a great way to kind of navigate your way through that, you know, I think. So, you know, and one of my directors, I know her, she's a brilliant actor in her own right. And, just so happens she's got a background in stand-up comedy and also improv. I've even taken a class from her, an improv class, because that's one of my big fears, improv, you know? I've always liked, just give me a script, I'll memorize the lines, and I will make it work, I promise. But don't ask me to do improvisation. That was just always something that was really scary to me. And so I thought, well, do what you're afraid of. That's my thing. So I took her class, and let me tell you, I learned more about acting doing that class than any acting class I've ever taken. It was such a great thing, because you really have to learn to listen. And anyway, so yeah, so that's one of the reasons why she's where she is, because I trust her to be able to make sure we do find the funny because there's some heavy stuff in this. It's, you know, we kind of explore the suicide and PTSD, two really big and controversial. I feel like this could be slightly dangerous what I'm doing, but
well, good.
I like it. I like challenges, and it's going to bring out the best in me as an actor, I think. And I know Jason is up for the challenge as well, so it keeps you on your toes, if you will.
Yeah, and okay, so now you're the writer and producer of this project. This is, you're kind of the boss here, it sounds like. But how did you how did you assemble your team of like your co-producers or your fellow producers and these directors that you have? How did you pull this sort of group together?
Well, it's interesting because we don't have the entire crew yet, but I was doing a documentary called Doctor Who Am I, which is about Doctor Who fans. And Matthew Jacobs, who wrote the film, the Doctor Who movie, reached out to me and said, would you be interested in participating? And so I was, of course, thrilled, because I have really great friends that I've met who are Doctor Who fans. And I feel like it's a family. So I think it's fascinating, and I love Doctor Who fans. I do. So I thought it was a great idea, and I've never seen anything like it. And Matthew feels the same way, and he asked me to get involved. And by the way, this documentary should be out next year. And we shot some footage down. He shot a lot of footage at the Gallifrey One convention last February. And I went and participated for a day and did an interview and kind of pointed him in the direction of people that I knew that were interesting and that had great backgrounds. Unfortunately, a few of the families that I've become very close to weren't there. And it was such a bummer because they were perfect for this. I mean, one has a daughter named Grace Holloway, you know what I mean? With red hair. And she is one of the more adorable children I've ever met in my life. But they didn't come that year, so I was really bummed. But I was working with them, and he had this little tight crew shooting the film. And they barely spoke. They finished each other's sentences. Mm. They were smooth. They knew what they were doing. It was like a well-oiled machine. And there were three of them, the DP, the editor, co-director, and sound guy. And I just was thinking, gosh, this would be great to be working with these guys. So, and I was getting ready to do my short. So I started to think about that during the day. And at the end of that day, Matthew came to say goodbye. And he said, by the way, I think you should use these guys for your short. And I said, I'm on it. Believe me.
Yeah, good idea.
So about a month later, yeah, that's a good idea. Great idea. So I, that's how I got those guys. And then, one of whom will be co-directing and editing. And, of course, Dylan, the DP, is fabulous. And turns out he's a rock climber. I mean, he's a freak of nature. Wow. I'm not going to lie. He was jumping. If you get a look at some of these pictures, you're going to see him in the most absurd. Unfortunately, I did not take pictures that did him justice because he was balancing on rocks that, you know, 1 foot this way, 1 foot that way, and you're sudden death. And he was just running around like it was no problem. It made me sick to my stomach to watch him at first because I just kept thinking, oh my God, what is he? You know, it's like, ugh.
Yeah.
But then I kind of got over it, and he was just so sure-footed. He's like a billy goat. When I reached out to him to do this, he told me, you know, I'm a rock climber. I've got the equipment and everything. And I was like, oh, this is good. This is good because I can use that. I can really use that. And so, it's good to have somebody around who knows what they're doing when it comes to rock climbing, especially since the rock that we're going to be working on for the final couple scenes is god awful high. It's really up there. There's some pictures where you'll see what the view is from up there, and you'll realize how high it is. I even took a picture of Dylan, a couple pictures of Dylan when he was at the top and I was at the on the ground. And he looks like an ant.
Wow.
That's how high it is. He looks like a tiny little ant up there. So that's where we're going to be shooting the final scenes of the movie. And yes, and I did have a meltdown up there. I did. I got through a lot of it, no problem. And then the last final arc up, I had to sit down until it passed. But I did get mostly all the way up there. And we'll see how I do on the day. I mean, I realized that it was partly my peripheral vision. If I can't see the drop on either side of me, I'm good. But
sure.
If I can see it in my peripheral vision, then I start to have an issue.
Yeah.
And as you know, you get to that point when your fear kicks in, that's still rational. You're still thinking like a person. And then it gets to the next level where game's on, you know, it's, or game over or whatever. It's like, okay, now I don't know my own name. I can't control. I'm going to fall. And you freak out and it just grows and grows and grows like a wave. And so I just sort of had to sit down and I inched my way up the last bit on my butt and I felt like an idiot, but I did it. I had to do it. And I managed to stand, in a kind of funny hunched over position, but I stood and my legs were shaking, but I did it. And, next time I'll be better. And what we're thinking now, maybe I'll just have to get up there. We'll get like those horse blinder thingies,
yeah.
You know, those glasses you can wear so that it blocks your peripheral vision. And that might get me up there a lot quicker. So we're thinking we might have to cheat and to just actually get me to the very top. But we'll see. We'll see. Maybe I'll be really super conquering of this whole nightmare and be done with it. And that's what this whole thing has turned out to be for me. Not only a learning curve, but a way to kind of, and I didn't know I was doing it when I wrote it, but now I know I've done it to myself, which is basically facing every fear I have. I have to wear a dress. I don't wear dresses outside of when, you know, they make me in shows or something, but I will be wearing a dress and I will be on very high rocks in the desert sweating like crazy. So yeah, it's like a real challenge all the way around for me.
Now, the producer of the Doctor Who TV movie, Philip Siegel, produces a bunch of unscripted shows these days, as you know, and he did one called Ice Road Truckers Deadliest Roads. I highly recommend you never see that show.
You there?
Well, hello?
Okay.
Did you cut out
yeah,
for a second?
I lost you for a second.
Oh, okay, hold on. No worries. Let me just make note of the time code there. Okay.
Right after you said Ice Road Truckers.
Oh, okay. Here, let me just do that bit again. That's no problem. Okay, well, Philip Siegel, who produced the Doctor Who TV movie, produces a lot of unscripted shows these days. He's one of the bigger producers, actually, and he did one called Ice Road Truckers Deadliest Roads. I highly recommend you never see that show. It's a great show, but it's about truck drivers on the scariest roads in, I believe, India and South America, and it's just sheer drops that they're driving along. It's terrifying. But
okay, yeah, that's already, my stomach is turning.
Yeah, and I can't help but think, though, Daphne, maybe I'm wrong to sort of put this together, like, is this sort of journey of this confronting your fears and everything, I mean, it almost sounds like a metaphor for a career as an actor, because actors go through an enormous amount of rejection, disappointment. You know, you've talked about your frustration with some of the scripts that you get, and there's a lot of, there's a lot of glamour and success and being on TV, but a lot of people don't see, you know, when you don't get the callbacks, you don't get the roles that you want. And there's a lot of scary, scary things people have to go through in order to become a successful actor. Is this kind of experience almost like a metaphor for that, and metaphor for some of the other stuff you've gone through in your career?
I why not? Yeah, let's go there. Why the hell not? Look, my daughter is going to Juilliard. She's starting her fourth year in September. She's amazing. She's going to be an actor, is an actor. You know, when she told me she wanted to be an actor when she was like 12, I had a secret thing happen in my brain where I was like, oh, shit. Yeah. Okay. Because I know. I already know. I knew. And at the same time, I was like, well, you know, there. Also, at the same time, it was no question that I would support her 1,000%. There's no way. First of all, anybody who has a dream should go for it. I don't care what anyone says. And I have naysayers telling me that I, you know, why even try to be an actor? You know what the odds are? Oh, my God. And blah, blah, blah. But I grew up in the theater. I grew up on stage. It never occurred to me to be anything other than maybe when I was like really little, I thought maybe about being a veterinarian or something. You know what I mean? But acting was always my thing. I think at age 4, I was going to be an actor. And the people that tried to, let's put it this way, that didn't support my dream of being an actor professionally, they didn't help me by telling me that, other than to maybe make me prove them wrong, which can be a useful thing. But, I mean, painters, writers, musicians. I was just on the phone with a wonderful harpist last night, who may be helping me with the soundtrack, for the film. And we were talking about it. She knows a lot of musicians, brilliant musicians that, you know, have 2 or 3 jobs, real jobs, and still are trying to make it work. She's one of the lucky ones. She's making a living as a harpist, you know? And so it's the same way for any artist. And so I just figure, and I don't even care if it's a dream to be a scientist or, you know, a dream to be a mathematician or whatever it is. I just feel like you follow your dream. I don't really know how to navigate my way through this life without doing that. So this is a hard job. I mean, just think about it. If a lot of people can relate to this these days, but you're constantly out of work. You're constantly, you know, applying for a new job. So, or auditioning for a new job. So you're always wondering if this is going to be the last job you have. You can't help it because you're waiting for other people to say yes. And that is why this project is happening, because I just felt like it was time for me to put my money where my mouth is and do something that I've told other people to do, but I'd never done. It takes a lot of, you know, stupid courage to do it. But I believe in that. I really do. And I believe the best things come from doing what you're afraid of, which is my favorite little quote. So do it. Do it. Find a way. Make it happen. And with the way the technology is these days, you can kind of do that. You can find a way to get your stuff out there, no matter what it is. If you're a painter, drawer, cartoonist, you know, writer, whatever, you can get it out there. And so do. That's what I say. So that's what this is about, you know. And that, and I really want women to be able to be in positions of real creativity and productivity in film. And there's just not enough. Yeah, no, I've worked with 2 great women directors, both of whom I had on their very first directorial job. Mimi Leder being one of them, who directs big movies now, and is just a wonderful human being. She directed Pay It Forward. And I think the one about the asteroid was going to hit,
Deep Impact.
Deep Impact. So she's out there doing it. And, she directed me in a pilot called Sisters years and years ago. And it was her first time out as a director, and she was lovely. One of my favorite directors. And, Betty Thomas, who started out acting, doing Hill Street Blues. She's a tall blonde gal. Lovely. And she directed me on a show, and it was her first directorial. It was her debut as a director. So, they're out there, and they've been out there. And, you know, there's a handful that do get work, but there's just so many more of us. Mm-hmm. There's so many beautiful women artists who have a voice and need to be heard. So I really wanted to create a project that was going to reflect that. I've got some fantastic male crew people, but I've also got some great, great women. And I want to add to that as we go along, and I keep on bringing in more crew members. So I believe in women. I believe in the voices that they have, and I believe in their creativity. So, yeah, that's going to be a focus of mine, not only for this project, but any future project I do.
Yeah, and it's such a strange thing, and it bothers me because, you know, I mean, I have a girlfriend who's a writer, and a damn good one. She's a great writer. And it's terrible to me to think that her gender will prevent her from getting the opportunities that she should. You know, I'm not sitting here just like some weird tree-hugging liberal. I'm talking like pragmatically as both an industry professional, as somebody who would want to produce the best writers and directors. You know, if I was show running a show and the best scripts I got and it was a writer's room of 10 women and 2 guys, who cares if it's the best show? If it's 10 guys and 2 women, who cares? I want the best scripts to create that show. And I think we need to be looking at some of this stuff from just almost that, like, as a selfish viewer. I mean, my favorite show right now is Orange is the New Black. And there's no reason in the world why the Doctor Who wrestling fan from New Jersey, the heavy metal listening male wrestling fan, should love that show, other than the fact that, oh yeah, it's not just about demos, it's about what's great TV and what's great quality and great stories. And great stories come from everywhere, you know?
They do. I'll say this. When I first started to write many years ago, I found that my instinct was to always write with a male lead. And I found that that was happening. It was just like natural, because I'm sure that I had been programmed. I mean, you sort of reflect what you see. And when you see males being the leads in films all the time, then you tend to, you know, reflect that. And so I stopped myself and I went, well, wait a minute. Why am I doing that? And so I made a big sea change at that moment and just started to. So every single film I have is, you know, starts out being a story about a woman. There are wonderful male parts and, you know, roles in those too. But I made sure that I was not going to let my programming dictate my creativity. And boy, did it open up a whole world of creativity, because it just, there's a lot to talk about there. And women are complicated, you know, it's fascinating. My favorite show is a BBC thing called Scott and Bailey. Okay. And my ex had been saying, you know, you've got to watch the show. It's like not only starring women, but it's written by a woman, produced by a woman, directed by women mostly. You've got to check this thing out. So I finally did, and I absolutely love it. And it is brilliant. And there's great men in there too. I'm not going to lie, but the three leads are strong women and strong characters. And, there are elements that wouldn't be there had it been a traditional male, you know, male cops fighting the crime, you know, kind of thing, which we've all seen a million times. So yeah, I think it's doable, and I think it's time and it's overdue. And damn it, that's what we're going to do. And it's a little bit better, but there's still a huge schism. You know, there's just, I don't, we're stuck a little bit in this industry. So I think I'm going to help.
No, I agree. I think I think we're seeing a lot of gender roles changing in the world of society. And I think Hollywood's going to have to catch up to that. And media is going to have to catch up to what they're seeing. And I think all kinds of things, like even this, you know, the gay marriage historical decision that just came down, and the transgender thing and all this stuff, is going to opening up a lot of windows and a lot of eyes and a lot of doors as far as just overall equality. And I think that will be helping a lot of the issues out. I think there's an element, too, of, like, I think a lot of men are afraid to write women. You know, I think a lot of men don't necessarily know exactly how to tackle it, and sometimes forget that, look, just write a good three-dimensional character, and it'll be there.
That may be true, and I wouldn't doubt it, but I have to say, I've met some great male writers that write great female characters, too.
Good.
I mean, yeah, it's they're out there.
Well,
it's just, can you get it done? Can you get the money? Can you get the funding? Can you get it supported? And can you actually have it materialize? You know, it takes money, unfortunately, to shoot projects. I mean, God bless indie films, and the huge indie film world that is out there right now. They're winning the Academy Awards. They're, you know, those shows are really, I think, taking over. The big films, the big, huge money films are pretty much, you know, I'm not going to say reduced, but definitely limited to things like Marvel stuff, which is great, and it's fun, and it's lovely, and don't we love that? And we can eat our popcorn and have a grand time. But the indie films, I'm telling you, things like, you know, Little Miss Sunshine, all right? Yep. That was one of my favorite films, too. And, you know, the lead was a little girl. I mean, really. Yep. And wasn't she lovely? You know, we love that movie. So it's time. It's overdue. And I think it's just going to take some time to keep deprogramming. We're all subject to it. We're all, you know, probably at its mercy to some degree if we're not careful. And we can talk about any prejudices or any exclusions. Mm. It reaches, you know, into race areas where you don't realize that you're programmed. And it takes some real, I talked to my daughter about these things. You know, she's the younger generation, and so she has a very different programming set. And so we've had some really interesting conversations about this. And I think it's just a matter of being really diligent about it, about all of those issues. Any issue where you don't realize that you have a presumption about something or a fear of something. And so, yeah, it takes work, and it takes really being thoughtful and mindful about it, and being interested to watch your own reaction to things. So, but it's freeing. It feels good to get beyond it. I think.
Well, I think Ghostbusters will be a big one. I think we'll see what that'll be, an interesting test, and it is good. I mean, Bridesmaids was $500 million at the box office. So there are big movies with women out there happening.
Well, how about that?
You know,
what's her name? Amanda. What's her name?
Kristen Wiig.
That's no. The gal who was in Tammy. She was in.
Oh, Melissa McCarthy. The thing.
Yes.
Melissa McCarthy,
I mean, she is like my hero.
Yeah.
Okay? She's my hero because she's doing it. And she's actively involved in creating her future. And, you know, I mean, she's just, I just can't get enough of her. I think she is brilliant. And I love watching her. And I love the fact that she's getting support. You know, her projects are there. And it's fabulous. So, yay.
Yeah, like I remember seeing Bridesmaids, and I was just in tears watching that movie. It was so funny, but never once felt alienated because I was a guy. You know what I mean? I think there's this weird thing, and people are afraid of that with Ghostbusters, of like, oh well, it's gonna be only for chicks. It's not gonna be for dudes. It's like, God Almighty, that's such a weird, narrow point of view, and there's not really a lot of examples that you could use to back that up. You know, I'm sure the BBC shows you're talking about has a huge male audience. Orange is the New Black has a male audience. There's lots of shows out there that have defied that sort of limitation of the demographic.
Right.
Now, one of the funny things, you brought up how you and these directors and you as an actor have been a little, you said, sometimes disappointed in some of the roles you've gotten and now are writing some for yourself. And I've met several other women filmmakers, specifically Shannon and Shalise from Believe Entertainment, who just started their own production company, making their own movies because they didn't like the scripts and roles they were getting. What do you think, and I don't want to get super specific or like, you know, bashing whatever, but like, meaning like a specific script, but like, generally speaking, what is it that people are getting wrong about the women characters? What is it when you read a script like, oh God, that's just all wrong?
I would say, well, you know, this is kind of specific just to me.
Well, you know what I mean by specific? I just don't mean if you don't want to name drop a script. That's all I meant.
No, I won't name drop. I won't name drop. I don't think I can even remember the names of the things that I'm thinking about. I mean, I can see that there was a lot of stuff I did in my early career that, you know, I took whatever job was coming. And I booked a lot of jobs. But there was a lot of kind of veiled misogyny probably in those shows. And at that time and that era, I was just sort of, it's cool, you know. And I mean, I've been around a long time, so I've seen a huge change. We have further to go, but, yeah. So, for me though, specifically, I always had problems playing. I would get pegged for characters that were, kind of women that were users, that were kind of liars. That were always, had some sort of angle that they were playing, and they would use the men. They would be attracted to money. And I found those characters to be really boring. And, you know, the main challenge would be just to do it and not want to throw up. You know what I mean? It's just like, I hated those characters. And honestly, I didn't get a lot of those characters. I think it's kind of a weird thing because I kind of, you know, had this, ingenue type thing going on or early on in my career. But in truth, I've looked at my career and the characters that I actually booked most of the time were characters that had real challenges, either addictions, loss of family members, real kind of, interesting kind of challenging work. And that's because I think I do those better. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, they would, like, for instance, I did a show where, they wanted me to play the sports news broadcaster. I think it was. So I would be a person sitting there doing a news broadcast. Yippee-yay-ki-yo. You know what I mean? It's like, wow. Okay. Not really interesting to me, but, can I please audition for this other character, which had enormous challenges, was, you know, what the hell? She was, you know, abducted by aliens. So there's a challenge for you. But man, as a character and as an actor looking at that role, I thought, well, this is what I want to play. This is going to be, you know, a huge challenge. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but that's what's interesting to me. So I begged them, please, I will audition for the news broadcaster, but please let me audition for the other one. Please, please, please. And they said yes. So yeah, I went into the room and I auditioned for both characters and I did my best for each one, but I booked the one that I wanted, you know, and same thing happened with the OC. You know, they wanted me to audition for what would have been financially extremely good for me. An ongoing character. Can't remember the name of it, but somebody else got that part. I wanted the alcoholic screwed up mother, who is the reason why this poor kid has to go and live with all the rich people in Pacific Palisades. but that was just much more interesting to me. You know, I got to have a tattoo and I got to, you know, be completely inappropriate and just be awful. I've even had people realize, oh my God, that was you. And then, you know, a Doctor Who fan was like, oh my God, that was you. Oh, that was horrible. You were horrible. I mean, there were, you know, crestfallen. And I was like, but it was just an acting part. You see, it's okay. I'm a really nice person, but that was just really an interesting role for me. And it was, I was recurring on it, but I wasn't an ongoing role. So financially speaking, it wasn't the smart move, but I think acting wise, it was much more, I don't know, I got a lot more out of it. And boy, did I have fun. Those are some of my fondest memories. I got to do crazy stuff, you know? It was wonderful.
Now, I love talking about acting and stuff. It fascinates me because I imagine, isn't that kind of a huge compliment when somebody who knows you as one thing and has seen you as something else but didn't actually recognize you? Like, isn't that a pretty high compliment as an actor?
Yeah. I mean, and I don't see it because, you know, I don't really watch myself unless I absolutely have to. I prefer not to get that in my head. As an actor, I don't think it's really productive to kind of have a picture of yourself while you're acting. You don't want that in there, as far as I'm concerned. But, and plus, what if you don't like what you're seeing? You know, that's not very helpful. So I tend not to watch the stuff, but I feel like I'm pulling from my human self, not maybe Daphne, but I'm definitely pulling from my human self. And so it just feels like I'm me, human being, and I'm lending myself to this set of circumstances and conditions written by the author. So, you know, I'm always kind of shocked when people don't notice that it's me. Right. I do know one person that has said to me that every single character I've ever played, he says he never sees me, and he knows me very well. Huh. He's like, I never ever see you. And I thought that was really crazy because I'm drawing from my human self, if not my personal human self. So I think trying to keep the, especially since I've played a lot of nasty people, I'm not a nasty person, but I can pretend and I can imagine, and I think that's fun. So that's what acting is, you know what I'm saying? So, but somebody did tell me that once, and I thought that was, pretty huge. A really interesting thing to say. And my cousin once said that to me, with something that I'd done. She was like, that is so not you. That is so not you. And I was like, no, I know, but it's me. You know what I mean? It's the human me. So very interesting.
Well,
very interesting.
It's interesting because not everybody sees all of us. People see only what we reflect. But an actor will be pulling from all of themselves. You know what I mean? If that makes sense.
Yeah, no,
and their size.
The imagination is an amazing thing. It's really almost all you need, in my opinion.
Yeah,
I know there's a lot of actors that would disagree with me, and they use their personal tragedy to influence or to whatever, support whatever drama they're doing or something. So I get it. But I just find those kinds of tools to be useful if you're really in a bad position and you just haven't done your homework enough and you find yourself about to, they're about to call action and I don't feel like I can cry or something. So, I mean, that's happened to me once, I think, where I wasn't able to really get there when they said action. I got there eventually, but I didn't right at the very beginning. And so I find that if you have to draw on your personal stuff, that can be kind of like a loose thing. It's not always going to be there for you, but your imagination's always there. If you do your homework, your imagination will always be there for you. Imagine it enough, it becomes a visceral experience. And if you've got that under your belt by the time you step in front of the camera, that's when I think magic can happen. When you don't even recall every single thing that happened while you were between action and cut, but you were so there, it was real. And I think that's what we're all reaching for as actors, is just to be honest.
That's so,
really, really be real. You know what I mean?
That's so freaking cool. I just like, cause, and if you've never been on set, listener, there's just something about watching an actor before they go on camera. They transform, but they don't change. And I can't explain it. I wish I could, but I've seen actors go from, you know, so-and-so into a character, and it's a remarkable sort of thing. We don't have a ton of time left, but I would be eviscerated and burned by Star Trek fans if I don't at least ask one question about M'Lora. And it is kind of on topic here with some of the characters we're talking about. I'm sure, you know, I don't know what the story was, but if somebody says, hey, why don't you be on Star Trek and you're going to be playing Alien? Now, it's been a long time since I've seen the episode, but I remember that was an interesting character because she was wrestling with certain physical limitations and was kind of angry about it and kind of had a real sort of bitterness about her.
Yeah, she was kind of nasty.
But like, was
but
that
she kind of softens up.
Yeah, was that a were you like, did you enjoy that role? And were you like, oh, this is, you know, so much better than just playing like an alien out for world domination or something? I mean, it was a real person.
Yeah, no. I, again, there's another character where she was very stricken physically and was having to deal with real serious chronic pain. Actually, that's one of the few characters that some of my personal experience, not my own personal pain, physical pain, but I watched my grandmother go through years and years and years of pain when I was a kid. And that flashed through my brain quite a bit while I was doing that character. The dialogue, which is so difficult, it's like speaking a different language, so it's hard to kind of really have it be a visceral experience because a lot of it, you're sort of like, I'm not sure what all that means, but, and they were very picky about getting every single word correct. So if you missed one little word like the, you would start at the beginning and do it all over again.
Wow.
So there was that. There were the really super long hours. I had my longest shoot day on that show, 20-hour work day. I would get about 3 hours of sleep. I had a 4.5-hour makeup morning, getting into all the prosthetics and stuff. And then just 40 minutes after everybody's gone home, you're still getting it off. And then I luckily lived close so I could go home, sleep for a few hours and come back. So that was a challenging, physically challenging role in more ways than one. But I loved playing that character. I got to float and fly kind of, you know, a little bit of a Peter Pan moment for me. I got to deal with some really serious, issues, and I like conflict. I like challenges like that. And like I said, I think it brings the best out in me as an actor. So, it was a lot of fun to shoot and it's fun to transform like that. I mean, how often do you get to do it? Most of us don't get to do it very often. So it was a really great experience and one that I'm grateful I got to have.
Awesome. Well, if you loved M'Lore in Star Trek Deep Space Nine and loved Dr. Grace Holloway in Doctor Who, the TV movie, I encourage you to please check out the Once More with Feeling Indiegogo campaign. And even if you can't contribute, we live in the world now of social media and things like that. So if you can't give financially, throw out a tweet, throw out a Facebook post, put something up on Google+, spread the word, because there's a huge audience out there looking for movies like this and that want movies like this. And sometimes us as the audience, if we really want to see these type of movies, well, we got to got to pony up and contribute a bit to bring them to life. So I highly encourage you to check out the link below and spread the word wherever you can. Daphne, one of the interesting things about all this stuff is I want to ask you for your final thoughts on the movie. But also, I feel like people, screenwriters who are listening to this, always listen and to interviews with actors and experienced actors like Daphne Ashbrook, who's done everything under the sun. Because they talk about honesty and truth in characters, and not enough screenwriters talk about that. That's not something you find in every screenwriting manual, in every screenwriting book. You don't find it enough. And I've actually gotten some of my best screenwriting advice from listening to that with actors. Because when you get lost in your script, you're going to go back to what's the truth of this character? What do they want?
Right.
What are they going for? What is their goals? Whoever that character may be.
I agree. I think... I don't know. I tend to be kind of hideously honest in my personal life. That's just me. And I know that I've had someone tell me that they think actors are all liars, which I took great issue with because I think it's the opposite of that. I really do.
Yeah.
I think that your big challenge is to be believable and honest, no matter what the hell you're doing. Even if you're lying, if the character's lying, you want to be believable as a liar. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I know that's kind of contradiction, strange. But yeah, no. And I think it's much more interesting. I think the most interesting stories, I mean, I happen to be a documentary freak. I watch every documentary ever made. If I see it, I can't help myself. I got to watch it. That's just me. I read biographies. That is what's interesting to me, is I like to try to get to the truth of things. And, it's just what I find interesting. And I think we're so much more interesting than many of the scripts that I've read, where it's just like, you know, that's just exploitive. You're just trying to sell a movie. That's not the way that would, you could write that. You could still get your sex scene in or whatever you got to do.
Right.
But you could do it in a much more interesting way, in a much more realistic way, in a much more honest way. And so, yeah, it's like, why not just, I mean, it's all there in front of you. It's, we get to experience it every single day. It's a great place to get stories and, real life. And also I think that's part of our, I don't know if responsibility is the right word, but I think that's what we do as artists, which is kind of hard to say, call myself one, but what the hell, is you want to reflect the truth. You want to reflect what your experience is in real life, because then people can relate to it. People can understand it.
Yeah.
People can experience it, maybe get something out of it more than just say, you know, eating popcorn and having a great time. And entertainment, I got nothing against it. Just pure entertainment. There's nothing wrong with it. And there is a place for that. And we love that. I love that. But when it comes to much of what we're talking about, especially in the indie world, that's what indies tend to be more about. It's like little complications, little intimate truths that are complex. Maybe it's because it's just harder to write. Maybe that's it. It's not as easy to write something that has more complexity to it. And when you're just kind of, you know, writing something that's a cookie cutter, you know, smash them up, bang them up, I think those can be more interesting than they tend to be sometimes. But that's just me. So, yeah, indie film's where it's at. And tends to be where they get recognized, which is really great. You know, there are people that actually get to be recognized at the Academy Awards for their little indie films. And so, yay for that. I think that's great. And it speaks to what the audience really wants to see too.
So I think it's not only harder to write, but I think sometimes people are afraid to write it. Sometimes you have to go to places you're not comfortable as a writer.
Maybe that's
to tackle
Maybe
some of this stuff.
It.
And the fact is that you brought up another thing, and I know we're coming up on time here, but you brought up a lot of fear as far as this, you know, height thing and various things, and you're tackling all of it, and even being a producer for the first time and putting together a crew and making a movie for the first time. That's scary, scary stuff. And you're tackling it with a lot of confidence. And there's definitely a lesson in that as well.
Aw, thank you. You know what? This is it. There's no turning back. The show must go on, if you will.
Yeah.
And I just don't feel like I have anything to lose. There's really nothing to lose. If I do my job well as a producer, and I bang the script into a really beautiful one, which it's close. I'm still tweaking, but it's very, very, it's there. Do you know what I mean? The guts, it's all there. And it has in it what I want to see in it. So, and I tend to, like I said, be kind of painfully on the honest side as a person. And I think acting wise, that's part of me too. And so, maybe this is just an extension of all of that, which is just to tell the story. Don't be afraid. It's going to take you places that will be uncomfortable, but will make you laugh at the same time.
Oh, absolutely. And Daphne, let me guess. Once the idea is in there, once the idea is formulating, percolating, there's no getting rid of it, is there? Not until it's made.
No,
right?
I mean, No. I think, you gotta just sort of keep plugging away and it's kind of like building the field and they will come kind of moment. Which I really feel like. I don't know that I would have had the guts to do it had I not gotten this great investor to give me almost half of my budget. So that gave me a lot more courage than I think I would have had if I had to raise everything from zero. So that makes me feel like, we're halfway there. Let's keep going. We can do this. I know we can do this.
Absolutely.
And it will happen one way or another. So I just I don't know. It's very exciting. It's very exciting.
It is exciting. And when the movie's made and come out, you're going to come back on and we'll talk about the post-production process and production and everything and keep plugging away.
Oh, I have a million stories. Thank you.
Absolutely. No. So Once More with Feeling. It's available at Indiegogo. Check out the links below. You can also, for more information, and we haven't even talked about a million other endeavors that you've gotten up to that you can find out about at www.daphneashbrook.com. Daphne, I can't thank you enough for taking the time and coming on board to talk about this fantastic story.
Oh, thank you. No, this has been terrific. You're a great interviewer.
Well, you're a great interview subject, and you're a great actor and producer and writer, and this is the beginning of a fantastic adventure for you. I know it. So, and thanks. Thanks everybody for listening, downloading, tweeting, Google Plusing, Pinteresting. We got lots more exciting guests coming up this summer on the Handsome Timmy D Express.